Hey, come on in. I really feel like we've reached a place in our culture where religious conversations can seem tense or even taboo. So every week, I invite a different guest to sit down with me to talk about what they believe, what shaped that belief, and why it matters. My name's Tony Vicenda, and this is The Threshold. All right, so let's begin by just let's smell. Been a little whiskey taste in here. I accidentally, though not drunkenly, ordered some Jameson Irish whiskey cask mates, finished in craft beer barrels. This is the stout edition. It's like smoother up front, which then feels like you're getting kicked in the back of your throat towards the end.
Thank you.
Thank you. My lovely wife just brought us, or us, Father Parish. An ice cube. Welcome back, everybody. This is our New Year's Eve recovery priest versus layman episode. So we don't have a guest this week. You're just going to be treated to 30 to 45 minutes to 3.5 hours of the sonorous tones of Tony Vicenda, Father Colin.
Sonorous.
Bartholomew Parish.
My name's not that is not my middle name.
No, but it had a good flow to it. That's why I went with that. What's your middle name again?
Stevens.
Oh, you're a lasty. Like you got a middle name that's a last name.
Yeah, it's my mom's maiden name.
Yeah.
The only reason I'm looking at this is because I had somebody contacted me. Oh, my cousin Espen said that he would do an interview with us in March.
In March? That's awesome.
When he starts his podcast.
Oh, awesome. So he's looking to get that threshold bump. Tell people a little bit about Espen.
My cousin Espen works in the sustainability policy making market, as it were, for it's not a market, but he helps with awareness of sustainable society and commerce in Denmark. And so he helps, you know, he writes for magazines, he does videos, and some other stuff. I don't quite know what his actual job, that is his actual job. I don't know what the title would be.
Right.
He has a young kid and a wife-ish, which will be probably part of the conversation.
And you haven't seen him
I haven't seen him since 2011.
Right.
So in face-to-face.
And you did not grow up together.
No.
Because he grew up in Denmark.
Yeah. But his family would come over and visit and vice versa.
Well, I also know
he's also a former model.
Oh man! So the good looking genes run in the family. Is what mm-hmm. you're saying, yeah. So we've also got Anna Carter from Eden Invitation coming up. I'm super excited.
Nice.
Yeah. So
when is that one?
That's gonna be next week. Originally this week. She's at Seek though, like everybody in the hip young Catholic world except for us. Probably because we're not actually in the hip young Catholic world. You are, but only because you're a hip young Catholic. You got an old grumpy soul, though. So. So then we've also got Father Ian Van Houston, which I don't know if you know Father Ian or not. Do you know the Dresden Dolls? Are you familiar with them?
Yeah,
he was a bassist for them. For
what?
A while. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I can't. Number one, everybody he should be surprised that I know who the Dresden Dolls were because I own their album.
Their first album. That's really funny. So him and then Haley Smith, who you probably don't know Haley by name. You remember in the episode we had with Katie where we were talking about the person who basically they helped create a film for and helped find a nonprofit for who basically left their life to go catch refugees coming across the Mediterranean Ocean and like rescue them off the shore and like welcome them to like safety and the rest of their lives. She started a nonprofit for that. She's going to be on next week or in a couple weeks also too. So doing her interview on Thursday.
Nice.
So yeah, we got some really cool stuff coming up. I'm really excited about that. Some other interviews also too, but I'm excited to get your cousin in the mix. So after you talk about whiskey and then who are you doing, let's talk about something very important, something very, very seasonal.
How's my mustache look?
Looks very good. Okay. It's we're still in the 12 days of Christmas.
Yes.
Just a little bit longer. So I thought we should talk about why Father Parish hates Christmas.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Well, as Father Parish slides into depression deeper and deeper, as far as the Christmas season is concerned, for multiple reasons, let me take a drink of whiskey. No, it's just the commercialization of it.
Right. But this is not like a new thing. This isn't like, this is an adult onset. I hate Christmas. Or as a child, did you hate Christmas also?
I started disliking Christmas probably when I was 18.
Okay.
Because that was the first Christmas when, or at least Christmas stopped feeling the way that I thought it should feel, probably actually when I was around 15.
Okay.
Which is when my grandparents started to die. And then the family, extended family stuff got wonky. But then I think it really started going downhill in some ways with Christmas in Hong Kong, when I was 18, which is really weird and kind of cool at the same time, going to mass with a whole bunch of Filipino housemaids. Like, it was, that was interesting. St. Joseph's on Wan Chai. But I think like the, and then ever since then, like, I'd come back for Christmas stuff and it was just like always just more and more for me, just felt like, at least as an American, very vacant experience outside of the religious context.
Yeah. No, I can get that. I think for me, Christmas died when I was 14, like that kind of like fun spirit of Christmas. Died when I was 14, when one of my girlfriends told me she didn't want to break up with me because it was Christmas, which is not like a good thing to hear on Christmas. Like, I think our relationship's over, but I don't want to break up with you because it's Christmas. Seems like a really weird thing to hear. I must have been 15 because I was in 10th grade. That's a really weird thing to hear. And it's also them breaking up with you. Like, it doesn't matter if they're like, we're going to wait 3 days to break up, so it's not Christmas. Like, that's, I told her, I said, that's stupid. You can tell why that relationship didn't work. Well,
cat's out of the bag, my friend.
Yeah. So that was, I think, when it started. But when you have kids, it kind of, like, it comes back. Like, it's fun.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Like, it does. There are ways it gets reborn. And I guess that for you, probably, you know, is never going to be a thing. So maybe you got to figure out some way to rekindle the magic of Christmas.
I'm almost done reading the Narnia series, Chronicles of Narnia.
This is your first time through, right?
Yeah.
Did you, which order did you do them in? So there's a couple different ways for those who haven't ever done this. You can either read them in the order the author intended them to be read, which is chronological publication order, right? So Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, next book, then Magician's Nephew. Or there are a lot of people who prescribe reading The Magician's Nephew at the very beginning, so you actually get the chronology set in the world. So which way did you do it?
I started off with Don Treader, which is no one's list of places to begin.
Though it is, I will not lie, Don Treader is my favorite of the series.
The only reason I started there was because I had a friend who was reading it. I had only read that book, all right, for an ethics class, like during my college years, and I really loved it then. So for me, what happened was I started with that book when she was reading it, and then I started going on a little bit. I was like, well, I'm gonna get to like the last battle like way too soon, so I just said, oh, I'll just start from the beginning, and my book order happens to be chronological.
Okay, chronological publication.
Chronological storyline.
Okay, so there are a lot of people who are not going to like this, and they're all nerds, and so am I. I like chronological story order better. I don't know that I would have wanted to be exposed to them that way, but if you're going through for a second read, it's the way I would do it. Like, if you read them once, read them however you want to, whatever. Second time you do it, be intentional about doing it with the chronology of the story, because it opens up some really new things when you're going through Chronicles of Narnia the first time.
I have a copy of the book from 1975 or something like that, that I bought for reading on the bus. Cause my parents bought me this set of books when I was like 10.
Yeah.
All right. And I never cracked them open or used them. And I would just like, books. Right.
Yeah. No, because I grew up an entirely differently because I love books, but yeah.
And so I finally read those when I was, you know, 32.
My wife just stole my alcohol. I'm hoping she's going to bring it back. It's probably because she feels like I'm drinking too much.
Why did you just water that plant with that whiskey?
So, I like I said, I love it. So what's your big takeaway from Chronicles of Narnia reading as an adult for the first time?
First off, I would not count C.S. Lewis as on the same level as Tolkien by any means. I think.
Let's talk about that in a second. Go ahead. Keep on going though.
As far as, you know, this is just not like C.S. Lewis is not subtle. Right. Yeah. And so the way that Tolkien is subtle.
I don't know that I think Tolkien's subtle, but I want to hear your takeaway before we come back to this. We'll talk about Tolkien versus Lewis in a second. I think I agree with you in part, but I want to nuance it a little bit.
And I think that Tolkien was a better narrative writer.
Okay.
That being said, though, my big takeaway is I kind of wanted a picture of Jesus in the shape of Aslan in my room. And I was realizing, like, wow, I get like kind of like walking around and thinking to myself, man, I wonder what I can go back and read about Aslan, right? And when I started thinking like that, when I started realizing, like, because I read it right before I go to bed, I was like, wow, C.S. Lewis really did me a solid there. That's awesome. Because it made me go back actually and read the Gospels more narratively. Mm. So like it helped get me out of my academic head.
Okay.
When it came to reading the Gospels in particular.
Yeah. Because you could read the Gospels, you could approach the Gospels academically. You could approach the Gospels historically. You could approach the Gospels
morally,
factually. Yeah, whatever. The narrative approach really would have been
the primary way,
especially the Jews, like those telling the Gospel stories originally would have been telling this narrative story about Jesus, right? About the God-man.
Yeah.
And so the reality is we really are very distant from that in our modern culture. Like, we don't experience the character of Jesus, who is also just happens to be the person of Jesus.
Yeah. And so, and that's the thing. It's like, so I ended up buying a translation in the New Testament that was published this year, and it was published by this guy named David Bentley Hart.
So that white one you got?
And it's just awesome because you're going through it, and it's like, for example, I decided to start with Mark just because Mark is the most brief one and the most kind of like linguistically sketchy. And it's basically like, you know, Mark's writing this gospel and like, but the way we normally see the translations, we try to smooth it over in order to help us make sense of the writing, but he's constantly doing this and look here, he went and did this he goes and does this thing. And that was great. And everyone loved it. And now look, right? And he's just constantly going through. He's constantly saying, and look now. And look now. Look what he's doing, right? That's constantly his storyline, his narrative. So it's super choppy, but it's much more flowy for me.
Cool.
Cinematic, maybe.
Right. You get the overhead shot of Jesus walking down the road to Emmaus.
Yeah.
And so.
So there's that. And, so that was like what Lewis brought to the table anyway.
So I agree that Lewis is more overt, but I think it's for, I don't know that I would describe that Tolkien is subtle. I think,
I think there's different purposes.
Right. This is my thing. That's why it's hard. Right. Cause I don't, Tolkien wasn't trying to write a Christian narrative. The stuff in him just happened to be so deeply conflict that that's what came out, as opposed to Lewis, who sat down to write
a Christian narrative. Yeah.
Right. And so I think those are two very different things, neither of which is better or worse. Though I did have to, I feel like I crushed Elijah's dreams this week. I don't know that I said the names of my kids on the air before. Well, and Elijah's the one who's been most bothered by that. So,
where did he get his haircut?
Oh, it looks good. You got his haircut. We will not be posting pictures of it in the show notes, because that's the number one thing he hates, is when I put pictures of him in slideshows when I travel and speak. He's like, why are there pictures of me in things? I'm like, because you're my son, and I want people to look at you and go, oh, cute. They're not cute anymore. So, like, Micah is and Olin is, but the other ones are not. So, I don't include pictures
of them. He got his hair cut in the downstairs bathroom.
My wife cut his hair.
He asked me to
this week. So,
sometimes before I did it.
So, anyways, he was like, you know, there should be a Catholic, like, video game network. And I said, look, I'm going to say this as a guy who owns a company that has the word Catholic in the title. I don't know that it needs to be Catholic anything. But I think Catholics just need to do good, beautiful, and true things, like, and do them well and participate. We're going to try that next. Are you ready for that?
It's so good.
All right, good. So Father Parrish is trying some Reiki right now, which is Icelandic vodka. And it's got a little bit more of like a woody essence. It's almost like almonds in its flavor. But it's like, it's processed through volcanic rock and ash also.
And a horse bladder.
Yeah. So he's going back for more. You're trying to decide how much you hate it. So I will say, this is the only vodka I've ever had that I like. I'm gonna.
You should try it cold.
It is better cold.
Really?
Yeah, that's good, I think. But it's almost ginny. That's the other thing.
That's worse. It brings out the flavor more.
Well, there's more Jameson here.
Also. It's like, yeah, I'll just go with the jammy.
So the reality is he's just got this stuff coming out, poking, and he's not looking to be subtle. And I do sometimes wonder, like, for Tolkien, was there this desire to at some point say, look, whether or not I intended to write this narrative in this way, like, how much of my own stuff am I aware of? And how much of it am I going to be intentional about owning? And how much am I going to push back on? I would love to know that. I don't know if that
book exists
anywhere. If somebody does know that, let me know.
I think that C.S. Lewis is like rehashing of a Christian narrative, right? I think it was really deft and good because he gets at something at a different angle in an imaginative way that is able to help me. It wasn't preachy, number one. Number two, it's like, it makes you really want, like, I guess as a believer, right? And somebody who has like a history of being a believer now, and being faithful, I can see what experiences he's referencing in his own life. Like what spiritual experiences he's referencing in order to write about the particular encounters with Aslan. So... And I was really helped by that.
How do you feel about Susan getting kicked out?
So I just finished Prince Caspian. So
good thing I didn't spoil that.
Yeah. So thank God.
She's not in the rest of the books that you've already read, though.
That's true. Yeah. So that's fine. I mean, they got older, whatever.
How do you feel about that from a Christological perspective?
Well, I think the thing is that there is this, I don't know, actually, that's a good question. I don't think much of it, if only for the fact that I figured that they're from a different place.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the rules of, yeah, I don't mind it.
I know for some people that's like really a big sticking point, the fact that like if there's this all-loving, all-knowing Christ-like figure, why the hell is he kicking people out of his presence, which is not the narrative, right?
Yeah.
It is. So the reason I ask, there's this TV show. Well,
the Don Treader explicitly goes into that.
I mean, I understand like that it's addressed, but there are a lot of people for it was still a sticking point. So there's a TV show based on a book that has come out recently. It's called The Magicians. And it's from Sci-Fi, but it's on like Netflix now too. And it's this really interesting concept of a world in which magic is real. And there's this kind of Narnia-esque book called Fillory and Further, right? That's the Chronicles of Narnia parallel. And everybody just thinks it's a fantasy book, but it turns out that it's a thing, right? It's a real existent place, and it's actually the source of magic in the real world of this book. And there's this huge conflict part of it. But basically, it kind of is this very modern, very edgy, very postmodern take on why the Chronicles of Narnia suck, and a lot of like handsome and beautiful magicians like casting spells and having sex with each other. But
I'm not sure what the sex appeal is here. Why is this a sexy thing to?
It really shouldn't be. Like, there is in the book, there is, but in the casting of the movie, in the casting of the TV show, it's just like anything where it gets made in the TV. It's a visual medium. And so
I need to read the book probably,
or not.
Yeah, I don't have time. I'm going to be going into the boogers, the movie, the TV show, The Expanse from Sci-Fi.
I tried really hard.
To watch it?
Yeah, I really wanted to like it. And I don't know that I didn't like it. I just think it was really inconvenient for me to follow. And I read the book, and the book's actually really good.
So I'm going to be starting the book soon.
Okay.
But, yeah. So, okay, here's a topic.
Okay.
I've been realizing that I need to come at friendship from a totally different angle.
I'm glad you're finally realizing this. I do need that $20. No, I'm just kidding. Tell me about the direction that you. Oh,
I'm realizing now that I probably never knew how to have friends like stable. Like living with friends in a stable way for a long period of time because of my history being in the military and then the seminary, da, 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 da. Like you're always coming and going, right?
Yeah.
So like I've been realizing like, well, maybe basically like I think what I need without just going into too much like TMI for a podcast, number one, at the end of the day, I've been realizing like I need to come at like friendship from a totally different place where I need to be looking at it as almost in some ways exclusively a gift of self, which is like should be expected, I suppose, of my understanding of relationships in general. But I was thinking about it just like from concretely looking like from my own actions in my own life. Like if I live any other way, I usually end up just really unhappy. Mm-hmm. And I try to control and manipulate things and trying to get things my way. And that even if I did, it just wouldn't be helpful. So why don't I just open up my existence and be surprised if I give myself away? So anyway,
so I do need that $20.
Okay.
No, no. I mean, that's huge. And it's what actually that kind of leads into something I wanted to talk about. And this is something that's a little bit how the sausage was made is made. But,
you flush the toilet, right?
Yeah. We have to figure out, scheduling for the podcast all the time. And I want to go back to your last text that I didn't respond to.
Which one? Me having like my day off.
Yeah, which is a reasonable thing. Here's what I want to talk about. Right. So I am a 14-year married man. Mm-hmm. Right. You are 6 month in. Celibate ordained priest. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about kind of the juxtaposition specifically. Mm-hmm. Of what happens when your vocation is also your job is also your ministry, right? Mm-hmm. Because I experience tension between those things in a very specific way. Like I'm married. I don't get to take a day off of being married. Mm-hmm. They call that infidelity. Like, you know, and that's really in the reality is there are a lot of people in the American world, in the Western world who think like, hey, sometimes you just need a break from your spouse. That may be true. Like spouses need breaks from each other from time to time. However, you don't need a break from your marriage. You may need just some time alone or some time to recover. Like you need to go on a camping trip or a fishing trip or go play some board games with some friends, go out drinking, whatever. Like that's all fine. You can't take a break from your marriage, right? I also have a ministry, right? I have a number of different ministry outlets in which I'm serving the church or serving to help people encounter Christ. I also have one of those, and sometimes many of those pay me money, which does make them a job. And I know that for me, early on, that was really confusing, right? Like when I was first married, first working for the church, which all happened around the same time, first starting to do all other projects also, having kids, like those things were really complicated and taxing to figure out. But I had somebody like actively telling me when I was screwing up. Like I had a spouse who was like, yeah, you're not here enough, or you're not doing this well enough. And it's not like I'm not, well, I am better at it now. I'm not good at it, right? Like I still screw up on a regular basis with all those things. And when you sent me a text basically when we were trying to schedule this week's episode. And right now there's a whole lot going on at our community that's just been extra taxing for you in a way that I can avoid because I have a family and I can go home. And you really can't because your home is on parish property. So I feel like that's a real thing. I feel like that's a real thing that's interesting and real. Like right now you just feel like every day someone's trying to get you to do work, but you also have a vocation that's constant and consistent and that is in the world and doing ministry. And you also have people who are specifically seeking ministry stuff from you, but other people who are seeking like administrative or BS stuff from you, you know, or tasks that may not actually be ministry. I'd love to hear kind of where all those things are at in tension right now with you for whatever's appropriate.
Yeah, everything's new, number one, so I don't know much. And also every day is a brand new experience of being a priest because it's the new day of this year where I'm living it. I don't know, like I've been, there's no like my day off, like I don't, like today I celebrated Mass. Granted, I did on my own, you know, I did, you know, a couple hours of prayer today, which is not normal for my day off. Usually it's like just one, but.
And to clarify, that's 1 hour of prayer as opposed to just one prayer, right?
Yeah. 1 hour of prayer.
Still and a lot then, more prayer than a lot of other people. I'm just saying.
And then, but I did a couple hours today and, you know, and so the thing for me is like, I've asked myself the question, like, well, what is it like, what is my day off supposed to do? Right. And, the best that I've kind of come up with is that it's a time when I don't have to think about my responsibility, right. To like prepare something or to, have to like, I don't really, if I'm constantly having to think about my responsibility to prepare something, or to be somewhere, like then I'm not like, then I just start thinking about only that all the time. And I can't, I don't know, at least for me, that's not helpful. So I make a distinction, I guess, in right now, I don't know if this is something I just stick with and like, I don't know if it's right, granted, but I make a distinction between my vocation and my ministry.
Right. So tell me for you, what's the difference between your vocation and your ministry?
My vocation has to deal with who I am. And my ministry has to deal with what I do. And those aren't always the same things.
Can you give some examples?
Yeah. So things where they are the same would be like Mass and sacraments. Like those are like my ministry and my vocation are like, those don't have any separation. Okay. I think in, at least like I've been ordained 6 months. So I don't really, I'm real like, these are all probably going to change these understandings, but being with like, okay, like doing a podcast, I consider work, right? Like I consider that ministry. So it's not part of my, but it's not necessarily part of my vocation.
Okay.
Talking with people about their children, problem children, or talking about stuff like that, or people wanting, seeking advice is part of my ministry. And I would say it bleeds in to my vocation. My vocation bleeds into that a little bit, but So there are things that I'll be doing where, like, I can't, like, for example, me, like, answering emails for the high school is part of my ministry, not part of my vocation.
Right. I got a text this week that I can't get because my phone's not in front of me right now. It was somebody who told me that ever since you preached this weekend on the mission of a family, right, that they've been choking on some of the words. And they meant that in the sense of, like, the words you said have caught in their heart, and they are being motivated and moved by them.
Oh, okay.
And, like, not like they're choking on them, like you're hurting them, but, like, they are struggling to really live that out in the way that you challenge them to. So there's somebody who's a parishioner who very strongly resonated with the message that you provided this last weekend.
Well, that's good.
I just went to a different mass, and so.
No, that's fine. I mean, that's good. UN05, like, that was the one where I was struggling, the struggle bus most. Anyway, I said three things was develop emotional intelligence, like have an inner life, be able to describe it to be it so you can reveal it to the other. And that works both your spouse and also your kids, but ultimately as well, God. Anyway, but the last one I said was, middle one was pray together. The last one I said was witness to each other. Right. And I said, cause it's not about passing on values. And I said, because values, like, I'm not about, values are not what the Christian faith is, right? It's about passing on the ability to helping people, dispose people towards having a relationship with Jesus, right, and his church. And so an actual relationship. And I was realizing, like, that it's going to be super challenging when we have this preaching series about talking about not passing on either ideas or values primarily, but about witnessing to a relationship. It's the same thing at the high school, right? Where that's, like, super challenging. Cause if I can't pass on, like, a quantifiable value, which people don't even find factual anymore. Like, if values are just opinions for most people nowadays. But if I can't qualify it as a value, then what do I do? Well, that's my most blessed place, because that's when it's, like, it has to be a relationship.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the thing with Catholic education is, like, for me, like, I just want to tell these individuals, like, look, you know, like, staff and faculty, it's like, look, you know, if you're not interested in a relationship with Jesus and his church, right, that's, like, you have agency. That's your freedom, right? Like, I am not going to browbeat you on this, but I would like to challenge your freedom by saying, like, well, why teach here?
Yeah.
Right. Because if it's just a job, like, dude, there are so many high, better paying teacher jobs outside of the Catholic Church.
Right. Yeah. Well, and here's, I do want to clarify, this is not a school thing. This is a Catholic institution.
Yeah. This is a particularly a Catholic institution thing.
Catholic institutions are filled with people who are in influential positions, teachers.
Yeah, you're right.
Janitors, like, whoever. And this is not a reflection on St. Luke's. St. Luke's actually is pretty great, though not perfect, of people who are working for a Catholic institution but are not Catholic, or maybe culturally Catholic, but don't actually have any sort of desire to live their Catholic faith out in a significant or challenging way. I want to kind of pivot for the last couple of minutes. I was talking to Edmund Mitchell from Reverb Culture, who also has a new podcast called The Show with Edmund Mitchell that he's doing yesterday for way too long. It was like 2.5 hours of conversation that is about this. And I think this is kind of goes back to, because you want to know a lot about, like, how we do the show and like some of it was just tech talk that's all going to get cut out, but a lot of it was like the heart behind what we're doing. And for me, one of the things I keep on coming back to is this. I think one of the reason people are attracted to values or ideas or morals when they talk about the faith or want to evangelize or share faith with people, as opposed to what we do here or other ways of evangelizing, right? That's easier. It's not effective at all. But it's way easier to say, let me give you a list of values. Like, let me give you a list of behaviors. Let me give you, like, those things are cut or dry. Like, you're either doing them or you're not. And most people would agree with them whether or not they're Christian, right? There's no skin in the game. There's nothing hard about it. They're just usually just good basic moral truths or good values that are universal. It's way harder to ask somebody to be in a relationship. It's also way harder to be in a relationship with somebody. But we have, in our modern world, created this place where we somehow have idealized different historical eras of the church as a better time or a better place to have done things, because morals or values were all we had to express to people in that time, because Christianity was the dominant cultural force and had to reinforce the morals and the values. And if you look at that, every time we find ourselves in a place where we have a mindset of let's just do morals or let's just do values or that's all we need to push, and it's successful, that is the precursor, that is the first sign of an imminent decline.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and I would say that no matter what, like, so I could say that about any major culture that exists out there. By the time you're just able to try to push the values of your culture in a way that you think furthers it, but it really is just maintaining it, you're in an overture towards decline. And so if you're not asking people to be in relationship with each other, in a relationship with something bigger and transcendent, then you really should question what's going to happen next. And I just get really weary of people saying, well, this used to work, or this used to be the way it was, or this used to be the good, rather than saying, like, but this is what we have now.
Yes.
This is the gift we've been given. This is the place we've been called to live it. And living in that well. And that's something that's really kind of a struggle for me. Because I don't wish to live in some other age, right? I wish to live in this place that I've been given right now and live there well.
Yes.
So that's what I wish we were a little bit more focused in on, and as Catholic institutions and as people in general.
So I, just to kind of go on that, I was reading through Sufjan Stevens' Tumblr roll last night.
Which is one of the great religious texts of our day.
Yeah, and see what you did there. And so one of the things he brings up is, like, he was just asking people to follow the Ten Commandments, and which is hilarious because it's Sufjan Stevens, so he's not really prone to doing anything like that normally. But anyway, his point was, and I can't find the actual post now, but he was saying, like, look, there's nothing surprising about these commandments, right? They're just basics for being like a human.
Right.
Right. And so, which I thought, like, he goes, you don't have to believe they're inspired or anything like that. Like, it's just basics for human existence. I thought that was a really interesting point that he made.
Yeah. Can't wait till we have him on the show. I know he's a listener.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Sufjan, anytime you want to reach out, just let us know.
Yeah. Just stop, text bombing me. Like, that's just too much. Okay. Anyway, the thing on, I did want to pivot on something really quick as well, was this, is that, hey, like, doing this podcast helps. So the other day,
it's work. Just messing
with me. That's awesome. There's a whole pile of poo in your face now, man. Anyway, so I went to, on Friday. Yeah, on Friday, the day you ordered Jameson by accident. I went to Bothell, to the old high school, which is now at McMiniman's, which is weird. All right, by the way. So I went there to see my friend who was one of my best friends in high school, Alexander. And I'm like the only guy that calls him Alexander now, because I've been like, anyway. And he was there with his girlfriend and this other buddy that I had never met. I think his name was Drew. Anyway, so I went out to have a cigarette with Drew, and we were talking, and we just started talking about belief and religion, like, out of nowhere, because, well, out of nowhere, meaning, like, he goes, so what do you do? I'm like, I'm a Catholic priest. And so anyway, we went into it, and anyway, this guy goes into it, and it was like beautiful because I was able to just to be there and listen to his experience, affirm the good, and then just, you know, ask him questions, right, and see what he believed. And he was also surprisingly versed, yeah, right, because he went to a Bible college at one point.
So when did you tell him he was a heretic?
Well, I wrote it on the bottom of his coaster.
Yeah.
So they said, like, eat shiz and die, heretic. Right. So anyway.
Yeah. No, I mean, so that's the thing. Like, I will say this, like, going.
Sorry, the point of me telling this story, let me just finish. Sorry. Yeah. I realize I need to give the point. The point is that if you do this enough, it gets you to the place of with ease and without emergency, right? With ease, asking more questions and just helping you kind of grease the gears a little bit.
So
for normal
human conversation about important things, but also like if you are so inclined to actually like help people encounter something greater than just themselves, right?
Yeah.
Like, so I want to name the really cool thing we got to do over the break. I've been trying to get Father Parrish for 18 months to go play board games at Around the Table Gamer Pub.
I mean, is that tattoo joint right next to the place you guys are always tired? Okay.
Yeah, Good Karma, the tattoo place right next to Around the Table.
Yeah, that whole area's got a good vibe.
Yeah. So I'm trying to get.
I went up there yesterday, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for the invite.
No. I was training in a game.
Yeah.
And so
Civilization.
Yeah. And look, I had like, I also went to Goodwill to buy formal clothes. Sorry. Or to True Value Village. I went to True Value to get some formal clothes and I dressed myself as a shovel. Anyway. That's funny. But, I actually got like actual waisted, like real waist high pants, like true waist.
Like the high pants?
They're not high. They're just actually at your waist and they were pleated and they are amazing.
I just love that you actually said you got wasted and then you like stopped and then you kept on going. So we went to Around the Table, which is next to the tattoo place where we get our tattoos done. My wife and I, Good Karma, where I'm hoping to get Dylan, our artist, on sometime. We played games with Tim from a couple episodes ago and Brad from episode 2. I just had a good time. But one of the coolest things was like going in there and being a part of that and hearing like, Gwen behind the counter, like compliment the podcast, like hearing the conversations that like Tim and Brad were having, Layla coming up and talking to her briefly about her experience.
Is Layla married to Brad?
Layla is married to Nick, who was the guy working behind the counter, one of the co-owners.
Okay.
And so just hearing them kind of talk about their experience and hearing that like become a thing.
Yeah. That was really, really, really cool.
Oh man, this thing we actually want to have happen because of this podcast. We are actually organically watching this happen.
Yes.
In front of us, right? And that
really was super cool.
Yeah, like kind of seeing that kind of fruit of conversation was really a pretty amazing thing. And we got to go play a game called The Quiet Year, which Father Parrish had never played before, but is a fan favorite of myself, Tim, and Brad. Was a storytelling map drawing.
It was great. So the reason I took my other game up there to trade in is because I want to, get the Quiet Year. Whatever.
Nerds, my wife's making fun of us.
Dude, they offer schnitzel.
Yeah, they have great food, great beer. If you're in the greater Seattle area and want to ever go hang out at Around the Table with us, just let us know. If you're coming into the greater Seattle area and want to go hang out at Around the Table with us, let us know.
But you can go to the Greek deli next door if you want, that's run by a whole bunch of Pakistanis.
Yeah. Yep. Or you can go down and get a tattoo. So we always really enjoy the ability to just kind of sit down, let you guys get a little bit more insight into Father Parrish, us talk about nerdy things. I know some of you guys have mentioned you really love these episodes. I know that some of you guys really prefer the interviews. We are getting near the end of our first season here on The Threshold.
We are?
So you might say, as Father Parrish just said, what's a season on The Threshold? For us, a season is 20 interviews. So every 20 interviews, we'll take some time, we'll take stock, we'll look at what we've done, what we've achieved in the last little bit, and we'll take a couple of weeks off to make some adjustments. So we are going to be looking for some direct feedback from you guys as we move forward. So just keep an ear out for that over the next couple weeks. At the end of each interview, I may have a couple questions will pop out on our Facebook page and in some other places that we'd love to get some feedback around from you guys so that we can continue to make The Threshold better. I just ordered some new toys for us for to help kind of increase audio quality around everything that we're doing.
And Tony just bought an erector set that he's lying to you.
I bought a giant erector set, and it's the one with the magnets in it too, so it's really expensive. But no, we are always going to be looking for feedback on how we can make things better. We're also always looking for people who are interested to be on the show, especially people who have a different spiritual tradition or background than we do. But if you are Catholic or Christian and you ever want to be on, please let us know. We would love to add you to the list. But if you are atheist, agnostic, Wiccan, Hindu, Buddhist, Baha'i, nothing, something, whatever, that's got a different worldview than us, we would love to sit down and have a conversation about what really matters.
We're talking about you, Threshold Podcast, not the Threshold Podcast.
Yeah, Threshold Podcast. We do need it. So we should plan on episode 20. We should try to get it with the guys from the other
Threshold podcast.
It's all about magic and Wiccanism in people's daily lives. as a total crossover episode, threshold to threshold.
Where we talk about Saint Martin of Tours and felling trees.
That's right. So, but yeah, just keep an eye on that. And again, we talked about at the beginning some of the guests we're going to have coming up, but we're always looking for more. So until next time, get out there, accidentally order some Jameson Caskmates whiskey on Facebook and talk about what really matters. We'll see you guys soon.
Bye.